All these. Vavaha. Manifestations. Rajasattva Tama Mayaha. Created by the three modes of material nature. Passion, goodness, and ignorance. Guna. Qualities. Nama. Names. Kriya. Activities. Rupahai. And with forms. Vibhavyante. Are variously manifested. Yatatatam. Exactly to the right point. So translation, the supreme cause of all causes, Narayana, is situated in his own abode in the spiritual world. But nevertheless, he controls the entire cosmic manifestation according to the three modes of material nature, Sattvagun, Rajogun, and Tamogun. In this way, all living entities are awarded different qualities, different names such as Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, different duties according to the Varnashram institution, and different forms. Thus, Narayana is the cause of the entire cosmic manifestation. So we repeat. The supreme cause of all causes, Narayana, is situated in his own abode in the spiritual world. But nevertheless, he controls the entire cosmic manifestation according to the three modes of material nature. Sattvagun, Rajogun, and Tamogun. In this way, all living entities are awarded different qualities, different names, such as Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, different duties according to the Varnashram institution, and different forms. Thus, Narayana is the cause of the entire cosmic manifestation. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. The Vedas inform us, Natasya karyam karanam ca vidyate natatsamascha vyarikascha drishyate parasya shaktir vidayava shuyate svabhava ki yana mala kriyacha. That's from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, 6th chapter, text 8. Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is almighty, omnipotent. He has multifarious energies, and therefore he is able to remain in his own abode and without endeavor, supervise and manipulate the entire cosmic manifestation through the interaction of the three modes of material nature, Sattvagun, Rajogun, and Tamogun. These interactions create different forms, bodies, activities, and changes, which all occur perfectly. Because the Lord is perfect, everything works as if He were directly supervising and taking part of. Atheistic men, however, being covered by the three modes of material nature, cannot see Narayana to be the supreme cause behind all activities. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, text 13, Tribir Gunamayar Babar Ebi Sarvam Idam Jagat Mohitam Nabi Chanati Maham De Ebya Param Aviyam. Deluded by the three modes, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Because unintelligent agnostics are mohita, illusioned by the three modes of material nature, they cannot understand that Narayana Krishna is the supreme cause of all activities, as stated in the Brahma Samhita in the 5th chapter, text 1. Ishvara Paramakrishnaha Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karanam Karana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. So Yenasva Dam Yami Bhava Rajasattva Damo Maya Gunanama Kriya Rupaya Vivavyante Yata Tatam. So Omagana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakura Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I wanted to start by quoting a particular verse in the Bhagavad Gita. This is where a purport, actually Srila Prabhupada's purport, where he quotes the same verse from the Shrimati Bhagavatam Upanishad, and he gives a more complete translation to it. So this is in the third chapter, text 22 of the Bhagavad Gita. So I'll actually read, there's two verses connected with this, rather than the one verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted in the Bhagavatam purport. Atamishvaranam paramam maheshvaram tam devatanam paramam chadayavatam patim patinam paramam parastat vidam matevam uvanesham idjam tachashakaryam karanam chavidjate natatshamaschavyadikascha jishyate parasya shaktir vividayavashuyate swabhavaki jnana balakriyacha. The Supreme Lord is the controller of all other controllers, and he is the greatest of all the diverse planetary leaders. Everyone is under his control. All entities are delegated with particular power only by the Supreme Lord. They are not supreme themselves. He is also worshipable by all demigods and is the supreme director of all directors. Therefore, he is transcendental to all kinds of material leaders and controllers and worshipable by all. There is no one greater than him, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. He does not possess bodily form like that of an ordinary living entity. There is no difference between his body and his soul. He is absolute. All his senses are transcendental. Any one of his senses can perform the action of any other sense. Therefore, no one is greater than him or equal to him. His potencies are multifarious, and thus his deeds are automatically performed. This is the key word right here. Automatically performed as a natural sequence. So in other words, it's not when we talk about God being the supreme controller of the material energy that God is sitting in his office, surrounded by many different computer screens and a bank of telephones, like we normally see someone who's like the boss, and all sorts of buttons and things like that, and calling up the mode of passion. Okay, mode of passion, you should inflict Mother Tulsi with a little energy so she can go on Sankirtan for the Christmas marathon. And then after the month of December, okay, mode of ignorance, time to take over. So it's not that Krishna is doing it like that. That's a materialistic depiction. And actually, that point was brought out in a discussion that Srila Prabhupada had with Ambarish Prabhu. Ambarish picked up Prabhupada, so many of you are familiar with this story, picked up Prabhupada from the airport, and this is in Detroit, or as they say in French, Detroit. So, that's actually the original pronunciation. So anyways, he picked him up from the airport. They were driving by the Ford Motor Company. You were probably there at that time, around there. So, and then as they were driving by, Ambarish was driving the car. And one of the devotees said, basically, is this where Ambarish works? And Prabhupada said, no, he's the proprietor. It's not that he has to go to work. He's the proprietor. So it's the same thing with Krishna. When we talk about Krishna being the supreme controller, it wouldn't be complete if Krishna had to directly push all the buttons. Supreme controller means that he's apta-kama, as described in the first verse of the Bhagavatam. Apta-kama means that his desires are fulfilled just by his wanting them to be fulfilled. In other words, he doesn't have to do anything. Because all of his energies, and we've discussed this before, all of Krishna's energies, parasya shakti, this is also the verse Prabhupada quoted from the Shvetas Bhattu Upanishad, parasya shakti vrividayava shuyate svabhavaki yada balakriyacha, all of Krishna's shaktis, they're first class devotees of Krishna. And the distinction between first class devotee or servant, second class, third class is made many times by Srila Prabhupada. The first class is one who doesn't have to be told what to do. In other words, the master can just relax. Or in the case of Krishna, he can just like, venam konanta maravinda dalayataksha. He could just play his flute with his girlfriend. He doesn't get a call from the factory. You know, hey, you know, the boiler blew up today. It's just like, sometimes, you know, I'm traveling around the world, enjoying life, and all of a sudden I get an email from the factory, Nukaloka. The things that, you know, the water's out. And so, you know, I just have to tell them how to get the water back on. But Krishna's servants are not only ready to carry out Krishna's desires without him asking, but they know how to do it too, because they're pure devotees. They have spiritual intelligence. So in other words, it's not that they generally have to ask advice from Krishna. I mean, sometimes things go really wrong and they have to just pray Krishna and Narayan, you know, you better appear as a reincarnation to help us. But in general, but this is actually a pastime, because Krishna doesn't have to appear as incarnations to Parichanaya, Sadhanam, Vinashaya, Jadushkantam. Prabhupada said his energies can take care of that. His energies, like Durga, can take care of killing the demons. His devotees can take care of establishing religious principles. So, you know, out of pastimes, it appears that Krishna has to come down. I mean, the devotees are thinking like that, like Lord Brahma, when the earth was overburdened with the demoniac force, and Bhumi approached Lord Brahma thought, you know, I don't have any solutions for this. Better call for Krishna. So he gets on his mobile phone. In that case, the mobile phone is, he goes to the shore of the ocean of milk, and he just starts meditating, and then Krishna says, you know, you should all appear, I'm going to appear, I'll take care of this, don't worry. But actually, he doesn't have to do that, because Krishna doesn't have to do anything. Krishna just likes to enjoy. Goloka evinivasati akilatma bhuta. He's able to accomplish everything just by remaining in Goloka Vrindavan. But he enjoys coming down, fighting with demons, who happen to be in most cases his devotees. And this is chivalrous. It's the indirect rasas that he has with his devotees. Chivalrous, anger, adhuta, wonderment, ghastliness. I mean, all these different seven indirect rasas which flavor the direct rasas. But anyway, Krishna doesn't have to come. It's not that Krishna has to show up at the factory one day, which is the material world, in order to set things right. Although he does it, just so he can show us what he's like, so we can enjoy his pastimes in the material world. But ultimately, his energies are first-class servants. So we describe what a first-class servant is. A second-class servant has to be told what to do. Not so bad. We would like a few of those. Second-class servant is told what to do, and he does it gladly. Wow. Jai Krishna, I'll do it. Like that. And third-class servant has to be told what to do, but he's just like grumbling under his breath the whole time. And tenth-class servant, he's told what to do, and he doesn't do it. So you see, actually, you can see Arjuna progressing through these different stages in the Bhagavad Gita from tenth-class servant. Because Krishna says, fight, and Arjuna said, no way, Jose. He said, I'm not going to fight. You know, it's better that I die. You know, how can I enjoy life? You know, what an excuse. He's giving sense gratification as an excuse not to fight for Krishna. He said, you know, how can we enjoy if our relatives are killed? You know, it's better I just like give up the fight, and he drops his bow and everything like that. So that's a 10th class servant. Dropping the bow, you know, like Prabhupada says, do this, and the one just goes, okay. So Arjuna is brought up gradually. Then gradually he says, all right, you know, gradually you could feel in the Bhagavad Gita an underlying mood that he's suddenly going to fight, but I'm not going to like it. And then after that, you know, gladly do it. And then after that, he's ready to carry out Krishna's desire at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. So he moves up. It's an interesting study. You know, he moves up from the 10th class to 3rd class to 2nd class, 1st class servant to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, that's our position. You know, when we first come in contact with the Krishna Conscious Movement, you know, 4 regulated principles, oh no. And then after a while, we begin to do this resentfully. You know, I have to get up. Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, I hate to get up out of bed. You know that song? You don't know the song. Anyway, and then after a while, well, then we do it gladly. Well, it's my spiritual master's order, and after a while, we're spontaneous. That's Raganuga. So we also proceed through these different stages. You know, stubbornness, and eventually gladly doing it, and eventually doing it just out of spontaneity. So spontaneous devotional service is first-class devotional service. Like Bhava Bhakti, and of course Prema Bhakti, what to speak of Prema Bhakti. That's all done like as a service. You don't have to be told what to do. Krishna doesn't give you a to-do list at the beginning of the day. You know, today, you know, got to cook me some laddus. Like this. No, it's not like that. Anyway, so Krishna is actually the controller just by wishing things to happen. That's what it means to be a supreme controller. Not that you're the intermediate man pushing the buttons. But just like, you know, I wish it to happen. Doesn't even have to think about it very much. It's just like, okay. Material energy. Maya is his pure devotee. She's called Vaishnavi. And of course the three modes of material nature is pure devotees. And Lord Brahma in our universe is the pure devotee. And Yamaraj is a pure devotee who's being referred to here. Anyway. So why is this verse here? Let's describe this. What this verse describing Krishna's supreme dominion? That is to establish, as we talked about epistemology yesterday, you know, how do you know what you know? That is to establish the Yamadutas' statements as being absolute. So first the Yamadutas in the previous verse state, that which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, the Vedas, and then go through the whole Vedas thing. And then they say the Vedas are directly the supreme personality of God and are self-born. Thus we have heard. So in other words, to establish the authenticity of the Vedas, it is necessary to establish the position of Narayan. Because the Vedas depend on, they come from the breathing of Narayan. So they're very much connected. You can't have the Vedas being absolute without Narayan. It just doesn't work. They're all connected to each other. You understand? So this is a very, very important, what we call epistemological point. So yesterday we were talking about faith. This is actually a very interesting discussion, like faith, how faith is in every word of the Supreme Personality of God in the Vedic literatures. And of course, we quoted this verse, Yasya Devi Pura Bhakti, Yata Devi Tata Guru. One who has implicit faith in the words of the spiritual master and the supreme personality of God in the Vedic literatures, everything is revealed to someone. Revealed is very important because this knowledge is actually meant for revelation. It's not just jnana, it's meant for vijnana, practical application and revelation. And if we look at this is the purpose of the Bhagavatam, the Vedic literatures. So as Prabhupada said, so we can see Krishna in every page of the Bhagavatam. This is Prabhupada's quote. Can you imagine seeing Krishna in every page of the Bhagavatam? I mean, I tried that. I'm not quite on that level. Krishna, where are you? You know, just like that song. What's that song by George Harrison? Krishna, where are you? I hear your flute in the mountains. Anyway, so but to actually see Krishna through sound, shushrusho sradhanasya vasudeva gata ruchi, through sound vibration in every page of the Bhagavatam. So in order for that to happen, we need faith, and our approach to the Bhagavatam has to be through disciplic succession. That's what energizes our ability to understand the Bhagavatam. Sampradaya vinaya mantraste nishpala mataha. That one can chant mantras, approach different books, but if you're not taking this from the sampradaya, then it won't have effect. In other words, the effect should be to see Krishna in every page of the Bhagavatam. That's the effect we're looking for. Not simply to be reciting verses to convince people that we're erudite scholars. So anyway, this requires, because Krishna is God, and dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat, then whatever he says is true, and sometimes it requires a big leap of faith. I mean, just like there's certain things in the Bhagavatam that are challenging to people's faith. I mean, for example, flying mountains. Has anyone here ever seen a mountain fly? Uh-huh. In cartoons, yeah, but not... I mean, just like I was listening to this discussion, a Prabhupada was driving up to Gita Nagari one time, and as he was driving up to Gita Nagari, and he was going along whatever road it was, the Ohio River or something, and there was a big mountain there. And Prabhupada said to the devotee, "That mountain used to have wings."
Wow. That's funny.
And you go, ooh. Wings, mountains. Of course, these things, obviously, when we're going out and preaching to people, that's not the first thing we discuss with people in Chapel Hill. Do you believe in flying mountains? They'll relegate us to the insanity bin at that particular point. Obviously. I mean, somehow or other. I mean, there's a lot of things. I'm just like the scientists. The more they bombard the atom, the more they look at the outer space, there's amazing things. I mean, like Einstein, for example, he looked at all of his equations and he said, well, according to these equations, there must be a black hole in space. But this, I don't believe in that. Those equations were saying one thing and he didn't believe in it. Because how could there be a black hole? How could there be infinite gravity at a particular point? You know, just like one matter can, not to get into a whole scientific discussion, when matter compresses into what's called a singularity, something to impress people, you listen to me, you impress people when you go to you. Singularity means gravity becomes so intense, like let's say your sun, not your sun in terms of daughter, but the sun in the sky ends its life and it just like compresses and all the electrons and muons and everything like that just compress into one little thing. So it's described that the sun could be compressed to the size of a baseball, a little bit bigger than that, and it would have the same gravity that it has now. And then it creates this black hole in space that is so, has so much gravity that even light can't escape from it. That's why it's called a black hole, that even light can't escape from it. It even pulls light beams, you know, photons, or, you know, light back into it. And so Einstein said, I can't believe in it. But then eventually the scientists found the black holes in space. Of course, I'm not advocating, you know, preaching the scientific stuff. You know, sometimes scientists have black holes somewhere else in there because they don't accept Krishna. That's a different issue. But at the same time, you know, sometimes things are just so incredulous. I mean, who would have believed 50 years ago there was a black hole in space? Or so many things in the microscopic level or the subatomic level that are occurring, you know, vibrating strings and everything like that. I mean, the scientists, they come out with more weird things than flying mountains. And people have so much faith in them, you know, because they can produce some gadgets. But we have faith because we can produce transcendental consciousness. Prabhupada said that this is real magic. You know, hippies to happies. You know, hippies to happies, you know, Krishna conscious people. The holy name. So, of course, obviously we don't want to really disturb people's minds by presenting things. But Prabhupada did this sometimes. I mean, sometimes he would say to the reporters something like the mountains thing. He would just be meeting with the reporters and saying there's something that's flying mountains and the reporters didn't know what to say. You know, they were just so bewildered by something just so much out of the blue like that. Anyway, so these are tests of faith. And the interesting thing about faith is that if you start doubting things, I mean, somehow or other we may not understand how things are true. That's all right. Or we may apply what's called, Prabhupada said, philosophical speculation, different hermeneutical tools. That word, hermeneutics, is very interesting. Does anyone know where that word comes from? It comes from Hermes. Does anyone know who Hermes is?
Greek god.
He was the Greek god who transferred, you know, the messenger. He had little, like, wings on his feet. It's interesting. I don't know if he actually existed. Don't take what I'm saying, you know, like as the absolute truth right now. But that's where hermeneutical came from. So, so we may not know how things are true, but if we start doubting, guess what happens? It's like a sweater. I remember many years ago someone knitted me a sweater. And there was just like strings hanging out of it. One string hanging out of it. I thought, you know, just like pull that string out. Guess what happened to the sweater? It was a ball of yarn after a few minutes. The whole thing just unraveled. And I, you know, how did I explain that to the poor lady who spent 3 months knitting me this beautiful sweater? I don't know. But then, in any case, that's faith. You know, we have faith. May not understand how it's true, but somehow or other, just like, you know, Prabhupada talked about I'll give you a typical one, the distance between the earth and the moon and the earth and the sun. I mean, if you analyze it according to the ecliptic, that's what it describes, Prabhupada. Ecliptic means the plane of the earth's orbit around the sun. If you analyze it according to the ecliptic, or Bhumandala, let's say the distance from Bhumandala described in the fifth canto, that's actually what's happening. So sometimes we see things through our own particular understanding, and it's hard to believe how that could be true. But when you see things through, you know, from a higher dimensional understanding, then it's easier to understand. That's why Prabhupada said, when the devotees were trying to make diagrams of the fifth canto description of the universe, you just don't understand, you know, you're not seeing things properly. So one has to be careful about this faith, you know, faith unraveling, you know, doubts unraveling everything. Because let's say you doubt something that Krishna says, well, then maybe that's not true. Maybe Krishna doesn't play a flute. Maybe he plays a guitar instead of a flute. Maybe he wears blue jeans or something. Member of Krishna West. But anyway, so then the whole thing just unravels. And then you just have a ball of yarn there. And that's literally what happened to many people, in different religions. I mean, I was just listening to one discussion that, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu had. It was really interesting. He was saying that, during the 1960s, many of the Catholic monks and nuns, they lost faith in the teachings of the church. Of course, the teachings of the church, I'm not saying they're perfect, but because they equated the teachings of the church with Jesus Christ, that was the problem. See, that's the problem. The problem was the papal infallibility, where they considered the Pope to be infallible. And so, once they saw the Pope was pretty fallible, which is true, we're not denying that. Of course, there's different philosophies about the Pope. When he's speaking ex cathedra from Shastra, then he's considered infallible. When he's just an ordinary guy, he's considered just an ordinary guy. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that. So what happened is that they lost faith in the Pope, for one reason or other. And then the whole thing unraveled, and the monks and the nuns, they started dating each other. And the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life, one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life, that Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, before he joined the movement, anyway, he used to take herbal medicine. And he introduced many of the monks and nuns to this herbal medicine, you know, the smokes. They came to him because they thought, you know, he's a hippie, you know, he knows. In other words, they rejected their faith in the church or whatever, the teachings of the church. And so they thought, you know, now we can just become hippies. And so the monks and nuns ended up with real long hair smoking marijuana. Not all of them, but, you know, in America it's very hard to recruit monks. Catholic Church has a lot of problems, therefore they import, just like we import people from India to do puja. So they import the people from Ireland and other places to be monks and nuns here. So the funny thing is that he was discussing was that you know, he was a hippie, and then he introduced these monks and the nuns to hippiedom. And then 10 years later, he had a bald head, and the monks and nuns had, well, of course the nuns always had long hair, But the monks had, you know, shoulder length hair like the hippies, so he would run into them in the street. And they would just like look at him and he'd look at them. And they'd roll over laughing. You know, because there was a whole change in position, you know, 180 degrees from a monk nun to hippie, and then 180 degrees from, you know, I guess he wasn't like a pure hippie, but from someone who was into the, anyway, that generation, to like a monk or a nun. So it's all, anyway, the point I'm making is all just a question of faith, because that's really what sustains us, that faith in the process of Krishna consciousness, faith in Krishna, the Vedic literatures, and we may not understand everything. Certainly I don't. I'm not claiming to understand everything, but still it sustains us. I have this firm faith, following the instructions of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, and chanting and following the sadhana process, you know, waking up early in the morning, that I'll go back to Godhead. So this is what sustains us. This is what keeps us strong, that faith. Dhrita vrita, as described by Krishna in the Gita. Vajanti mam dhrita vrita. Okay. So I think that's all we have time for. Any questions or comments? Touched upon a lot of topics in class. What's that? Yeah. Not all demigods. Generally, they're mixed.
So they have the intelligence how to do it. So,
when it was a pure devotee, that's an interesting point. Mm-hmm. One who is a pure devotee of Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that he has the intelligence to do anything, but he's empowered, like Prabhupada said, the instruction of the spiritual master contains within it the success potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And also Prabhupada said he knows where to go for knowledge to do something. Like Prabhupada gave the example of also Henry Ford. Henry Ford was being accused of being stupid. So he sued the guy who was accusing him of being stupid, and then he went to court, and Henry Ford, you know, somehow or other he demonstrated, here's a whole row of buttons. I may not know how to do this technological thing or that technological thing, but if I push the button, someone comes. You know, so who is more intelligent, the technologist? Prabhupada was using that to illustrate the point that technologist is the Shudra occupation. So who is more intelligent? The person who is the boss of the technologist, who can just call, or the person who has to learn all the technology. Like that. So the pure devotee, yes, he knows where to go for knowledge. It's not that he's Krishna. The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upiyantate. Krishna gives him the intelligence how to come to him, but it's not that he just sits there and doesn't read any books and says, Krishna, provide the intelligence. Because Krishna gives him the intelligence on how to get the knowledge. You understand? So you study, just like sometimes we study sociology and other things to understand about the dynamics of religious institutions. Yeah, it's not that you just sit down and let Krishna do the work. Krishna, you tell me everything. I'm going to sit, wake up tomorrow, and I'm going to be speaking Hindi tomorrow when I wake up, Krishna. That would be nice. I tried it. It doesn't work. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada.